This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, an advocacy group heads to federal court to stop upcoming elections in New Orleans. And don't call it a comeback. Kobe Bryant has a new shoe and a new ad campaign for Nike. But should he? Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our D.C. headquarters, Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania. Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of globalization and education at New York University, joins us from our New York bureau. And George Curry, editor-in-chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service, joins us from Laurel, Maryland. And he's filling in for a sick Nat Irvin, so we hope that Nat will get better soon. And we thank George Curry for pulling that duty. Appreciate it. Now, let's talk about the advocacy group that, in fact, has filed a lawsuit. The Advancement Project is the group. They're a D.C.-based advocacy group, and their suggestion is that the election, the upcoming New Orleans election, would not be fair. It would rely too much on what they call cumbersome absentee voting, and they're concerned about displaced black voters. The NAACP has also raised question and concern and suggested that the organization itself may organize protests to challenge these elections, Mary Frances Berry. How much do you feel that this is fair game?
I think that I'm happy they filed the lawsuit, and my suggestion would be if you look at what happened in Iraq when we had the elections, and Iraqis who were not even in the country and were someplace else could go down to polling places to vote, happened around here. If you look at when the election took place in Brazil, I remember when Lula was elected, Brazilians who were in this country could go to the consul's office or to the embassy to vote. There ought to be polling places set up around the country where these large numbers of evacuees are. We know there are lots of them in Atlanta. There's some all around the country so that they can vote not just by mail, but that they can go and actually vote. If they can do it in Iraq, if they can do it in the case of these others, I hope that that will be one of the remedies. Otherwise, you're going to end up with an election that will be flawed.
Marcella, we should note that even if they take Mary's suggestion there, and we know how difficult it is sometimes to cast your ballot when things aren't moved, this is going to be a terribly cumbersome election and one that will be contentious and challenged, one would think, after the fact, possibly.
Yes, it will, but it really doesn't have to. In other words, we do have the infrastructure now to make sure that every displaced voter has an opportunity to cast a vote and that the votes be counted. The cases that we've already discussed in the next Mexican election, Mexican immigrants in the United States will vote as well. There is really no excuse for not guaranteeing and making really every bona fide effort to make sure that every dislocated voter has an opportunity to cast and have his or her vote counted. This will be a complex process, but that's the work of democracy.
George, one of the other concerns that many are raising is the fact that Ray Nagin, the incumbent mayor, is the only black candidate among about six or so people who will be running. The changing demographic and the changing hue, if you will, of New Orleans is another concern of many.
Yeah, actually, the last count I saw was 10, Ed, running, and another one expected to announce on Friday. So it'll be a long list. And most of them are white, who see that their political fortunes have changed, that they have a chance to govern. And interestingly, Mayor Moon Landrieu's son, Mitch, who's a lieutenant governor, and Landrieu was the last white mayor there in 78, is running. And so they see this as a chance. When two-thirds of the population displaced, most of them African-Americans, that for the first time in a long time, they can elect a white mayor, and that's why so many are jumping into this. You got to also understand what Nagin is, that he was not supported by the African-American community. He was really the candidate of the business community. So that's a flip there. He's trying to appeal to African-Americans who mostly didn't vote for him the last time. And then you got all these white candidates in the race who feel that they can become mayor of New Orleans.
All right, turn our attention. Go ahead, Mary, real quick.
Nagin feels now he's been he's abandoned now by the business group that put him in. And the people who are running, the other white guys who are running, want to shape the future of the city and keep it that way with that kind of power. So they're just taking the opportunity. And Nagin is now sort of abandoned by people who supported him before.
Well, we'll turn our attention to another African-American candidate who finds himself in some hot water. This is Maryland Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele, who, after linking stem cell research to a Nazi experimentation, and what is seen by most as a kind of offhand comment, we'll give you the verbatim in just a moment, found himself having to apologize to the Jewish community, by some accounts suggesting he did so profusely, end quote. Let me read what he said here. This was during an appearance before the Baltimore Jewish Council. In talking about stem cell research after a question, he says that he's cautious about the idea of tinkering around with life. And then he added, quote, look, you all folks know what happens when people decide they want to experiment on human beings, when they want to take your life and use it as a tool. He went on to say, I know that as well from my community and our experience with slavery, end quote. Marcelo, here we should note that most of the Jewish organizations have gone back to say they appreciate that he gave the apology, and they did not feel that he was a hate monger, just that he did not think about this. It's these kind of off comments, off-handed comments that get politicians in trouble. Your thought here?
Yeah, indeed. And I think that it's also an indication of how we are politicizing very important, very basic scientific breakthroughs that will have tremendous importance and tremendous relevance moving forward. So in a way, this is an unfortunate, very unfortunate comment that indexes this problem that we're having in trying to develop a language to talk about moving forward the kinds of scientific considerations that will become increasingly possible that will have tremendous implications for medical science, for health and well-being. So politicians should be cautious in interfering in or offering their reflections on these kinds of new scientific opportunities.
George Curry, beyond that, there are those who are also suggesting that this kind of takes the cloak away from Michael Steele, who tried to paint himself as a moderate when he talked about the scientific end of this, in suggesting that he wanted to be cautious. Most folks would say that that is counter to what polling shows most Americans want. This goes back to whether or not he is a conservative in sheep's clothing, so to speak.
Well, the question was, well, you know, he was projected as a person who could rise above partisan politics. And I was equally offended that he's tried to use slavery also as an argument against STEM research. Right. I mean, the problem here is that the risk he's running is that can he really control what he says on the campaign trail? Don't forget last summer, when the governor, his running mate, had a fundraiser at an all-white country club, and he said, oh, I don't play golf, so it's not an issue with me. It's these off-the-cuff comments that can get him in trouble. Now, he did apologize. It was accepted, and then after you do that, I don't know what else you can expect people to do.
Well, you
Mary, there are whispers inside the Republican Party that suggest, because of what George just mentioned in this comment, that he is now being seen by some as what they call an accident-prone candidate.
Well, he is part of a new phenomenon, which is we've got a bunch of candidates who run for offices various places who have no prior experience with campaigning, who put foot in mouth, and then sometimes they survive and sometimes they don't. And then he's part of another phenomenon, putting the black guy on the ticket so you can appeal to whites and to blacks who will now think you're less conservative, like Ehrlich did. But and it also shows the ballistic nature of talking about the Holocaust, which is something we talked about last week, and just mentioning that got overshadowed the part he said about slavery. But I think Michael Steele will not be permanently damaged by this. He ought to be permanently damaged by something, because I haven't forgotten about the study he promised that he was going to do on the death penalty and how he was going to take the study that had been done and do something to mitigate the discrimination in the death penalty. And Maryland never did anything. That was just a campaign promise he left behind. But I think that he's not ready for prime time, but I think he may survive this as a candidate for this. He'll get the nomination. They don't have any other alternative, and we'll see where it goes.
Marcelo, I'm curious. You raised an interesting point. Often what we're seeing in the way that politics are covered today is the idea that the real true core issue often gets lost in the trappings of, if you will. Are you bothered by that? And should we point fingers at the media?
I think that the media doesn't help in terms of really enabling us to think through complicated questions. Here we're talking about science, but we're also talking about equations, slavery, the Holocaust, so on and so forth. In a way, our political culture today does not lend itself to the kind of reflection, to the kind of thoughtful consideration that unfortunately we will need moving forward in dealing with these very complicated considerations. So as long as we live in a culture of sound bites, as long as we live in a culture of the least common denominator, we will be facing these kinds of slips, verbal slips, let's call them, over and over again.
George, here's an interesting thought. The idea that we haven't seen perhaps the same kind or the kind of heat I think many people anticipated, perhaps too early in the game, out of the state of Maryland. When you look, as Mary suggested, that outside of any real disaster, Michael Steele is probably going to be the Republican candidate. And, of course, in a fight for the Democratic side is Kwesi Mfume. I think a lot of people are expecting fireworks when you're talking about two, quote, viable African-American candidates, though Mfume is not the same shoe-in as Michael Steele. Too early or a bit of a dud?
Well, I think he can overcome it, as Dr. Barry, Mary Frances Barry said. I mean, because we got a lot of examples in the past of people just making similar offensive, obnoxious comments. Jimmy Carter. Remember Jimmy Carter said that he wanted to preserve the white neighborhoods for ethnic purity?
Yeah, I remember.
And
that.
Then a former governor, Senator Fritz Holland, call African Americans darkies and Mexican Americans as wetbacks. I mean, we have a long history of this, and these people overcome this. So I think he'll overcome it as well.
And what of the idea, Mary, of what people's expectation was, the excitement of having two African-American candidates run for such a high-profile position? Is this something that we just have to give it time and get a little closer?
We will have to do that. This is going to be another one of those tests of whether people just say, oh, my gosh, there is a black guy on the ticket, and therefore we should vote for him, whoever it is. I think Kwesi is going to have a tough time getting the nomination from Cardin, who is the guy, the congressman who's running against him. There are other people, but Cardin's way ahead in the race in terms of the money he's raised and all the rest. But it would be exciting to see the two of them, with Kwesi with all of his talents and all of his flaws and his experience, up against Steele.
All right, let me get to this very quickly. 2.5 years after a sex scandal, we are seeing Kobe Bryant emerge as a pitchman for Nike. Many of us who watch sports on the weekend saw this inundate all of the coverage of basketball, college, and professional. It shows Kobe in a gym shooting free throws, and he narrates over this footage, "Love me or hate me, it's one or the other, always has been. Hate my game, hate my swagger, hate my fadeaway, hate my hunger. Hate that I'm a veteran, a champion. Hate that. Hate it with all your heart. And hate that I'm loved for the exact same reasons." When you take a look at this, George Curry, many people... Go ahead, Mary. You want to jump in? Many people assume he would never recover from this and never be a pitchman. 2.5 years later, here he is, lead man for Nike.
It was amazing what an 81-point game will do for you. You know? I mean, they had him on a shelf for 2.5 years because shortly after he signed that contract with Nike, that's when the whole sex scandal came up. What they hate him for is causing Shaq to leave and breaking up the Lakers. That's why people hate him. They hate him for a lot of reasons. They don't love him. And it's an interesting approach because you remember how sanitized all the commercial was and for Michael Jordan and how he was Mr. America and lovable and all the other things. People know that they hate Kobe Bryant, and they're trying to address it, and this ad is not going to change that.
Yeah.
Marcelo, interestingly enough, in terms of just the imagery, though, prior to this and prior to the sex scandal, Kobe Bryant was portrayed by McDonald's and others as this all-American guy.
Yeah, it's an interesting transformation, but I hear a lot of hate and not enough love in the way the ad is framed. So clearly they're going to do their research in terms of the outcome of this new campaign, and we'll have to see whether this in fact works as a rehabilitation move in terms of his standing in the world of advertisement.
Mary, are you okay with the idea of him even being a pitchman for a major corporation after all of this?
Otherwise, Ed, I'd have to be opposed to all these pitchmen. There's so many of them that have disgusting backgrounds. And there's so many people in sports, as in the field of entertainment, who are not role models, who are disgusting in their
behavior.
And in
politics.
And here's a guy, and in politics, too, but we're talking about sports. But here's a guy who is, the commercial to me is braggadocio. It's like, I'm on the muscle. Here I am. Hate me. Well, I don't think a guy who is accused of sexual assault and then just the trial falls apart because a woman doesn't testify and then he has to settle it civilly and he says he had sex with her and all that, I don't think he has much to brag about, even though he did make 81 points. His team isn't even ahead. As I looked at it this morning, they're behind all the other teams. I don't know whether they're even going to make the playoffs. So it'll work. People have short memories, and maybe they'll do some testing, as Marcelo said, the company will, to see if it works. And if it works, they'll keep it out there.
Well, in fact, I was in Los Angeles last week. He was making a store appearance, and there were people wrapped around the block to meet him and get that new shoe. So if nothing else, one thing is for sure, like death and taxes, Nike will make money. All right, George Curry, Mary Frances Berry, Marcelo Suarez Orozco, we thank you all for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.